Good morning, and welcome to Frankly Speaking. During today's program, we'll discuss the courts and your kids, keeping them apart. I'm Joan Ziemba for George Mason University. Juvenile crime in Northern Virginia committed by children under 14 years of age has increased 11% since 1976. Crime committed by juveniles ages 15 to 17 has increased 26%. Many of the crimes have been committed by children from middle-class families. What's happening with your kids, and what can you do about it? To discuss this today, our guests are Dr. Stephen Halbrook, attorney and assistant professor of philosophy and religion at George Mason University, and Dr. Max Schluter, assistant professor of sociology at George Mason. Dr. Schluter, as a member of the Fairfax County Court Citizens Advisory Council, how serious is crime in Fairfax County with juveniles?
Well, juvenile crime is a definite problem in Fairfax County, and the Fairfax County Court serves a grand number of kids involved in juvenile delinquent behavior. There has been a peak, I would say, in juvenile crime around 1980. That is to say that crime has increased along with the growing population, and especially a younger population in Fairfax County. But in 1981, we're starting to see a decline in the amount of actual cases brought before the juvenile court, which we think in large part is a result of the population getting older. That is to say, less people are actually involved under the jurisdiction of the court because they're simply getting older.
Dr. Halbrook, as a lawyer working with juveniles in the courts, is there a predominant cause for juvenile crime?
Well, it would be difficult to reduce causation to simple theory. There are a number of causes for crime, I suppose. We might be somewhat speculative concerning that. Many of the children you see as abused and neglected youngsters, you see them in the court system at that point along with their parents. Some of those end up getting in trouble too. In fact, on the same day, you might see their parent in criminal court. Same day, they might be in juvenile court either as an abused and neglected child or as one charged with a crime. However, crimes by juveniles certainly are not limited to those that are abused and neglected. Quite frequently, middle and upper class youngsters commit burglaries and different kinds of larcenies and other crimes. So that all kinds of people are participating in crime. And it would be difficult to single out any particular cause. Probably various things have to do with it in terms of parental supervision. There's a lack of it because of the growing employment, for example, of both spouses, such that there's no one home a good part of the day. And you can get away with a lot more these days, maybe for that reason, partially. But I couldn't reduce the cause of this juvenile crime to any particular cause. Is just something that's going on quite a bit now. Boredom, just all kinds of things play a part. And I don't think your typical larceny, for example, is committed because the kid is hungry. It's committed because if you look at the kinds of things that are taken, for example, stolen, they really aren't items that are needed for day-to-day needs in any way.
Is there a common crime among juveniles, a crime that's committed more by juveniles?
Well, your property offenses, both adults and juveniles commit probably more of those than any other kind of crime. Shoplifting, breaking and entering into homes, thefts of items out of automobiles, that kind of thing. You don't see too many violent larcenies such as robbery, but typically when some youngsters are out of school either because of summer, say, or they're skipping school, whatever. They'll ride around, they'll find a house without a car in front, and they'll break in at random. Of course, I'm talking about a relatively small number of juveniles, and I would like to make that quite clear in the beginning that we're talking about a very small number of juveniles who are participating in crime.
There's a number of methods for dealing with juveniles with problems, ranging from a liberal understanding to a rigidly disciplined, tough love approach. From your experiences working with juveniles, which method do you think is most effective? Dr. Schluter, why don't we start with you?
Okay. That's a real wide sort of question. When you look at the idea of saying that the way to deal with juvenile delinquency is to get tough, to punish kids, you're sort of assuming that in large part juvenile delinquency is a free will sort of situation. That is to say that kids make a decision completely freely that they're going to do this and that sort of behavior. And consequently, the way to control it then is to punish them in a way to deter them from doing it in the future. I would tend to disagree with that. That is to say, I think people's free will tend to be limited by, being a sociologist, by social sorts of conditions. And those things have to do with unemployment, the economic level of a particular family, issues that might have to do with school or failure in the school and sense of lack of self-worth that's a result of that. Those sorts of situations. In other words, I don't think that you can deal with juveniles by punishing them if in some respects their juvenile delinquency is a function of social sorts of conditions. So I guess I would say that trying to understand the causes of that behavior from more of a larger perspective is probably the way that would be most effective.
Could you give us an example, such as in the case of a runaway?
Okay, runaway situations is sort of a classic thing. Many states deal with runaway kids in punitive sorts of fashions. In other words, a child runs away, a judge might decide to lock that kid in a detention center to teach the kid a lesson, as to say, make it unpleasant for the child to run away. Well, that ignores the fact that the child might be running from the home for a very good reason, that the child might be abused in the family, both physically or even emotionally, or the child is being taken advantage of in the home, or the parents are in a situation where they are in constant turmoil and they scapegoat the child. The point is there that by taking the child out and punishing the child, I don't see where that in any way is going to deal with the family conditions which maybe have precipitated the run to start with.
Dr. Halbrook, which method do you think would be most effective?
Well, let me begin by following up on with a comment from what Max was saying. We have the idea crime is increasing, okay? If part of that crime is runaway juveniles, then we understand it's a crime that doesn't apply to adults, number one. There are restrictions on the freedom, and I mean freedom in a more of a social, political sense than free will, as in free will and determinism. Restraints on freedom of children involving, for example, running away or truancy and that kind of thing. And of course, insofar as the rising crime statistics might include those sorts of offenses, it creates a false sense of danger, I think. But I agree with Max. In many cases, the kids are running away from a bad home situation and using punitive measures to take care of that really sidetracks what the problem is all about. I recently handled a case of a runaway child who was put in detention, and he wasn't bothering anybody. He was living in a tree hut near his home, in fact. And incarcerate somebody for that really, of course, leaves that juvenile maybe with the wrong impression of the court system. I think in terms of the get tough approach versus the bleeding heart approach, if you will, there's no set answer because every juvenile delinquent is different. They would respond in different ways. I think initially, however, if we're talking about it from a parental angle, punish them now. Don't turn them in. If you turn them in, or if you cooperate or fail to resist a conviction of, for example, a significant offense such as a felony, you're punishing the child later in life with the record. Even though juvenile records are protected to some extent, they do have a way of cropping up later. And I think that avoiding the court system, if there's ways of disciplining the youngster by avoiding the court system, that is ideal.
What if that doesn't work and the child is arrested for a minor crime? How can the parents avoid the juvenile court at that point?
Well, they really, if it's a minor crime or a major crime, we have to remember that an arrest is not a crime, or it doesn't indicate a crime has taken place. Really, a conviction is what we're talking about. And in juvenile court, the standard is a finding of non-innocent. Instead of guilty or not guilty, we have innocent or non-innocent. Just because a child's been arrested doesn't mean that the child, of course, committed any offense. And consulting with legal counsel is important at that point, because a police officer may be the child's best friend, or he may be someone after promotion. And there are a number of charges that are brought, of course, against both juveniles and adults that do not end up sticking. Felonies that are really misdemeanors, or typical reckless driving charge juveniles frequently plead guilty to. They are known for their maneuvers in automobiles, of course. often really is nothing but improper driving, so that either through the process of plea bargaining, where the child, of course, could actually be guilty of a felony and have it reduced to a misdemeanor because there's problems with the Commonwealth's case in regard to evidence, for example. That plus the fact that children might be charged with offenses that don't fit the facts, they might be guilty of a lesser included offense, makes it imperative for the parent, if he has the welfare of the child at heart, to consult counsel and to make an attempt to keep the child's record as clean as possible. We aren't only talking about a record, of course, we're also talking about punishment. For first offenders, the court system in this area is relatively lenient, depending, of course, on the nature of the offense. Some juvenile records look like they've had 20 years at it, though, and for those types, we often have them being remanded to the Department of Corrections. And they can be in custody of the Department of Corrections until age 21, even though they turn 18. So it's important to try to work the problems out if you can at the home level and to minimize contact with the courts. And I say that in all respect, of course, for judges. We've got some very good judges in the juvenile and domestic relation courts here in Fairfax County. And in some cases, they have punish children in certain ways that probably has been very beneficial for the child. But it's better to avoid the court if you can.
If parents are having problems with their children in the law, what resources are available to them through the courts or the community before their child ends up in court?
Well, there are a number of resources in the community that ought to be tried initially. If the child is having problems, there are plenty of psychologists and psychiatrists within the area where they can consult, and they frequently do. Of course, that gets partly into an economic problem for those that can't afford it. However, there are a number of community resources of that nature that can be brought into the picture. Once you start getting the court system involved, you're talking about nosy social workers, and don't let me offend social workers by saying that, but you are, of course, getting rid of a lot of privacy that you would otherwise have. And for those who feel strongly enough if the child has a problem, in most cases I think that there are solutions outside of the court system, because once we go in the court system, we're talking about and how many parents want to do this, telling on their children, in other words, turning them in for crimes and so forth. And I realize that citizens have might be said to have a duty to try to prevent crimes, but do you really want to prosecute your own child for selling some of your silver, for example, or for some other offense that you might be able to handle it outside of the court system?
Dr. Sluder, do you know of any other county services that might be available to you?
Well, this is a very wealthy county, and it consequently has a very, very well-defined and developed network. There are runaway homes in this county that are not part of the juvenile court. There are counseling services, as you were mentioning, in terms of many of the hospitals provide these sorts of services, as well as private sorts of programs. There are a considerable number of youth organizations. All these sorts of things could be turned to for support. I think the major issue about going to the court is that you've got to remember that once you and your kid is involved in the court, the parent loses control over the destiny of that case. In other words, you can't just sort of step out all of a sudden. I mean, you're in the system, and the system is going to just grind along at its own pace, and that's something to be very much cautioned of, I think.
Well, thank you. I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd like to thank you, Dr. Max Sluder, Dr. Stephen Halbrook. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Joan Ziemba for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.